Blog Talk
hey
Radio.
Guys. Just kidding. Guess not. Okay, now that the little voice has shut up. Hey guys, welcome to Weekdays with Murph. Cody is still out of commission, but I'm here with my wing woman, Kathy, and she's going to help me interview today's guest, Patsy Pease. And this is Patsy's second time on the show, even though it hasn't been that long since she was here the first time. Just couldn't wait to talk to her again, I guess. So everyone enjoy, and you can call in if you want to talk to Patsy or to me and Kathy, but, you know, we're not famous, so you probably don't want to talk to us. So, yeah, hey, guys.
Well, you're a great conversationalist. I think that's all that's qualified for a radio talk show. Oh, first of all, I'm going to send a shout-out to Cody, and I can't wait to talk to him again. I talk to him all the time on Twitter, but it's really a lot of fun to talk with you guys. I'm glad to be back.
I'm glad you're back. I'm so excited. Yeah, because we talk all the time, but and everybody's like, you should have her back again. And I'm like, it's only been 2 months, but okay, I'm cool with that.
Well, so. I had fun. And, you know, we had so much left to say. We kind of ran out of time. We were still talking and gabbing away.
I know. We were all crying.
I know. It was like we were laughing. We were crying.
Session.
And I know. And then we had to say goodbye. So it was like we didn't finish our conversation.
Well, and you know,
I know this is a big group therapy.
You know,
I listened to it afterwards, and you guys had me all teary eyed and everything, and I was listening to it hours later.
It's got that laugh.
You deserved it, Kathy. Kathy is the reason for all my struggles. Okay, nobody understands. It would not be if it were not for Kathy. Like, I would not be in this like realm of like 80s soap. Like,
yeah.
Kathy's like, watch Santa Barbara. And I'm like, Santa Barbara's not on the air anymore. You can't get me addicted to something that's gonna end. And I'm like,
I know.
Then she's like, watch Days of Our Lives. And I'm like, Kathy, stop, but I'm already addicted to one. And then she gets me all addicted to Steve and Kayla. And I'm over here at midnight watching Steve and Kayla on the iPad, crying my eyes. Like, this is Kathy's fault.
Are you trying to say that I'm an enabler?
Kathy's fault.
Are you calling me?
What'd you say, Kathy?
I said, are you calling me an enabler?
Yeah, I think that's the therapy. Yeah, that's a 12-step term for it, I suppose. Yeah, you're going to have to detach with love,
he's an
honey.
Enabler. Even my mom tells Kathy, she tweeted Kathy, my mom did, and she's like, Kathy, do not get her addicted to another soap opera. It's bad enough. I have to watch one.
Well, you're supplying her with her stuff, and I think you're also being the supplier.
Yes. I know. You're like a drug dealer, Kathy. You're the supplier and you're the enabler. It's a real issue. Literally 2 minutes.
How did I go from being your saving grace to being a drug dealer?
You know, that was a big jump.
Oh, you're both. Like,
I must admit.
No. Okay, so here's the thing. Kathy is like my right hand woman, and she helps me out. And she's like, okay, we did a magazine drive at school, and it ended today. Kathy is the only person that bought for me. My whole family wouldn't buy for me, and Kathy bought for me. But
that's so she can sell it back to you later.
Like, yeah. But at the same time, she's the reason I have problems. Like, she's the reason I have Beau and Hope issues. I would not be obsessed with Beau and Hope if it weren't for Kathy. And then I watch Depressing. Like, it gets depressing after a while because it can't always be happy. And then I'm like, why did you get me invested in this? I'm over here. It's midnight, and I'm crying over fictional characters 30 years ago.
Well, like, you know, but then she's going to be there for you when you go through withdrawals, because there will come a time when it doesn't work anymore.
I know. That's so true, though.
You'll go through this.
Like, he's reason I keep going. So I was going to quit.
Oh, I wouldn't go
like
cold turkey.
I was going to quit.
No, I wouldn't go cold turkey.
I withdraw. No, okay. I thought it was a good idea, and it wasn't. Let me just preface it. Well, it wasn't. So I was on Tumblr, and that's this website. It's, you know, stupid. And I saw this little photo of, like, Beau and Hope's final scene ever. I'm like, I'm going to watch that. That's a great idea. This is at 1 in the morning. So, you know, you're hyper-emotional already. It's 1 in the morning. So
yeah.
I go to the iPad, and I look for this and find it, and then I watch it, and then I'm over here just, like, crying. And I'm like, that was not even okay. And then I text Kathy, and she's like, I didn't tell you to do that. Like, yeah. I didn't say you had to do it. It's not my fault. I was like, Kathy, you're the one that got me started, so now it's your fault that I'm invested in. That killed my... Like, I was a mess, and I was like, Kathy, this is all your fault. You started this. Like,
well, I bet some of the callers will have that in common with you. I bet some of the callers that call in will be able to tell the same story.
Yes. Well, and I don't watch it now. I told everybody, I'm like, I'm not watching Days of My Life right now. I'm not about to record two soap operas a day to watch when I get home at night. I was like, I will watch it eventually, but right now, no. And now I'm like, I'll just stick to the YouTube because I can control what I see then.
Well, it sounds like you need group help. The people that call in, I think that would be a good theme, is how do you handle your addiction to soaps? How's that working for you?
Especially your favorite couples, because, like, it's a real problem. I'm a Luke and Laura fan, so my struggle's for real. Because, like, that's the worst thing to be a fan of, because it's not happening.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, they're not even around anymore. So the biggest struggle is to be a Luke and Laura fan. Everybody understands. And just a Laura fan in general, because she comes and goes, like, every 5 minutes. So it's, like, it's a real issue. I'm like, y'all didn't tell me before I got into this how bad it was going to be. And everybody didn't tell you to be a Laura fan.
Especially,
you know, it's... I hate when you get invested in a pairing and then they break up and then they never get back together. And it's like, okay, yes, I'm done.
Yeah. Well, I'm
See,
sure a lot of people
but,
can identify with
you know. That. Oh, yeah, for sure. Y'all, if you need therapy, call us up and we will have a sit-down discussion about it.
What couple has broken your heart?
I had the greatest rant one night. So Cody and I were just, we do a GH recap every week, and there's this 15-minute period at the end of a show where you're just recording, and we just totally BS it always. And we're sitting here, and I was, like, so mad because these people on Twitter who are fans of a couple who've been together for, like, 3 months and broke up are complaining. I'm like, they're like, the struggle is real. I'm like, you don't understand what even that means. Like, are you a Luke and Laura fan? Are you a Stephen Caleb fan? I don't think so. So you need to stop because you don't understand what the struggle really is. And then I was on a fire. And Cody's like, you're going to get hounded. And I was like, whatever. It's true. And then people were like, I can't believe you feel that way. Like, your couple broke up after 3 months. I don't want to hear about it. It's only been 3 months, guys. Try 20 years and then stop. Me.
Right.
But yeah, so this is the constant theme of weekdays with Smurf. Anyways, I'm going to shut up now. Kathy, you want to talk?
Sure. I was just going to say, I was just flipping through your IMDb profile the other day, and I saw that you had done an episode of Remington Steele.
I did.
And,
yeah.
And so I have the box sets here at home because I always like that show because, you know, Pierce Brosnan, hello. So I pulled up that episode and watched, and I watched, it was really neat. I watched it just the other night, and I saw that you had interacted quite a bit during that episode with James Reed, who is now on Days of Our Lives.
I heard that. Yes. Well, actually, I played his girlfriend.
Yeah, right. And apparently, jack of all trades too. I think you were like this
Well,
to
be
crazy
well, actually, to be technically correct, it would be a Jill of all trades. But yes, that's what.
Yes.
Yeah. She could drive a tractor, and worked as a I think she was a steam shovel operator, and a bus driver. I mean, there's so many things that she just happened, whatever they needed, she just happened to have been employed, you know, under that particular job title.
So was that something that you had picked up before you got hired on at Days? Was that just a kind of a guest set thing, or when you were doing prime
time? That was before. I did a lot of nighttime episodes before I did Days.
Emily, are you good?
Okay. I did.
Sorry. I was letting you go because I thought Patsy and I could go on all day. So I was going to let you ask your questions before I get off of the rails again.
Oh, okay. I didn't want to cut anybody off.
Okay. So I hooked up with your cell phone coverage, so sometimes I get freaked out if I don't hear anything. But
oh, no, I was just waiting because I was going to let you ask your questions because Kathy and I could sit here and talk all day and then realize it's been an hour and we're out of time. So you get the important stuff out of the way, and then we'll have, like, some, you know, randomness occurrence. Okay, go ahead, Kathy. Your turn again.
Well, I know that you were kind of in that in-between stage before you got dazed, and I've heard you talk in the past about, you know, kind of what a tough period that was, that your car got stolen and everything else. So it was neat to see that you picked up a couple little shows like that before you know, got on your feet with dazed or whatever. So do you remember much about that experience? Or?
Well, that period of time was, I mean, our business is just so weird, and I've heard so many people say this. You go through periods where, you know, you're hot, and everybody wants to hire you, and people see you on this show, and then they hire you for their show, and you're going back and forth. And then all of a sudden, it's as if somebody put a curse on you, and no one will touch you. No one will hire you. You can't get a job to save your life. You can't get a parking ticket if you tried. So it goes from zero, from 180 miles an hour to a screeching halt. And it can do it at any time. And that's why a lot of people, it's a tough business, because that's you know, emotionally, that's a lot to absorb. It can really shake you up. And I mean, you're going on a momentum, and then all of a sudden to just stop suddenly and not have any place to go, not have a call time, not have something to do, not have people that are waiting for you to be there, just to have absolutely no plan whatsoever. So it's really scary. There is no guarantee. And that's what happened to me. I got into LA from doing Search for Tomorrow. And I started doing Remington Steele and Trapper John and some pilots. And even Jeannie Francis had, I think she had a series on something like about a perfume. I can't remember what it was. But she had a nighttime
show. Bare Essence. I've seen it.
Yes, it's Bare Essence.
She's my favorite.
Thank you.
So.
It was something about a perfume.
I'm like the Jeannie Francis Wikipedia page, if anybody needs to
know. Oh, okay. Okay, so I did that. This is before I even worked with Jeannie. I did her nighttime series. So, you know, I bounced around for a little bit, and, you know, I did the movie Roger Corman, Space Raiders, and I was on a roll. I thought, this is what's so dangerous. You think you're on a roll, but if you're not prepared for the way the business goes, you're in for a big shock. And that's what I got, because, I mean, you know, I was in my 20s, early 20s. What did I know? I just thought it was going to be like that, you know, forever. Mm-hmm. This is the way your life's going to be. But it's not the nature of the business. It goes up, it goes down, it stops like a dead bird in the road, and nobody will touch you. And then you get, you know, momentum up again, and you feel like you're never going to stop working, and then it just stops, and the rug is pulled out from underneath you, and you lose everything. The nature of the business. So you got to prepare. You got to know that going in, and prepare for rainy days, because, brother, there are going to be a lot of rainy days. And I didn't know that. And I didn't know not only was it going to be a rainy day for me, it was going to be a monsoon. Somebody stole my car, and my agency dumped me. Well, that's probably just as well, because I had no way to get to auditions. So I was in Los Angeles with no car and no agent. And I don't know which is worse, in Los Angeles to be without a car or without an agent, but I was without both. So therein lies the monsoon, and it hit, and it hit hard. And I was young and unprepared, and it's not supposed to be like this. And oh my God, what the hell happened? And that I had those little spurts of work, which were very misleading. So very misleading. So yeah,
it's understandable.
Yeah, I mean, you know, well, you know, there's a lot. You learn how to. Well, it's kind of like, you know, Rocky said, it's not how hard you can throw a punch, it's how hard a punch you can take and still get back up. I learned how to take hits. That was the secret for me. I don't know about anybody else, But for me to last 35 years in the business, which God help me, grace has been, you know, divine, been able to do, but what it was learning how to get hit, not take it personally, and plan for a rainy day, financially make investments smart, learn about money. It's called show business, not show fun. Show business, not show entertainment, or show business. So I had to learn about the business and the responsible side, because there will be times when if you don't have money, I don't care how talented you are, you ain't going anywhere. You have to leave town. You have to get on a bus and go back to where you came from. So you got to know how to take care of yourself. And that's what I learned more than anything else.
Leading from that, one of the things that I've always admired most about you is I really appreciate the work that you do, kind of shining a light in the dark corners when it comes to talking about mental illness and depression and things like that.
Oh, thank you.
And do you think that maybe those lessons that you had to learn with how tough a business?
Thank you. That's a good point. Yeah. No, Kathy, that's a really good point. Thank you for bringing that out, because I might add, after I've just griped about everything that happened, that I don't regret any of it. I mean, now that I've painted such a bleak picture of my beginnings in show business and depressed everybody, depressed the hell out of everybody who's listening, let me apologize and say I have no regrets. It all happened just the way it was supposed to happen to make me into the person I am today. And I wouldn't trade that for anything. So I'm very grateful. But the things that I have to talk about, you know, I paid a price. I paid a hefty price. Had I known at the time how heavy the price would be for being able to talk about mental illness, to be able to talk about, like you said, shine a light in those dark corners, I had to visit a lot of really, really scary, dark places and learn how to find my way out of them. And so that's what I can give away today, if anybody, whoever wants to listen. Whatever poor fool wants to stand still long enough and listen, that's the stuff I mainly have to talk about. You know, I can't talk about being like, you know, a great, brilliant, glamorous celebrity. I'm the last person in the world you want to ask that about Hollywood parties and, you know, who's wearing what, who won what award. I'm the last person, I really don't know, and it's probably because I really don't care.
If
you ask me, what is it like to drop to the very bottom of the barrel and grovel around until you climb and claw your way back out? I can tell you that. Oh, I could talk about that for weeks.
She can write a book about it.
Yeah. No, I learned how to be like the phoenix and truly come out of the burning embers of ashes, everything that's been destroyed and it looks like it's never going to be put together again. I learned how to rise like that phoenix. I learned how to do. I'm good at that. I'm good at taking the every broken piece, the brokenness of people, the brokenness of me, and join with other people. And by the way, I did none of this by myself. I learned how to say three magic words. I need help. Hello, surprise. No one is ever surprised to say,
yes,
I need help. They go, yes. And what's your point, Patsy? and your point is? So those are three magic words. Yeah, I need help. And I got help.
I don't think that's a bad thing at all, though, because, I mean, you know, if you look at something, you can look over, you know, you can look at TV, you can look at these tabloid shows and things like that and see what's going on, and there's something just so fake about what all's going on there. And certainly
Amen.
Somebody's reality, it's certainly somebody's reality, but it's sure not mine, but, you know,
it's somebody's reality. Well, you know, and I understand, You know, and I think, you know, I got to the point, I think you can grow out of relationships. And I think one of the things, any relationship, even a job, a career relationship. I know people by the time they've got my age, they've had three very distinctly different careers. And the reason that's happened is because they kind of learned what they needed to learn out of one phase of their life. And then it was just time to move on. And it wasn't that they couldn't do that job anymore. They couldn't do that career. They just weren't as interested. They weren't as hungry anymore. And I think that's probably what happened with me with acting is I had that hunger. I went to college. I got a bachelor's of fine arts. You know, I worked my butt off to get on a bus and pay for my way to New York from North Carolina. And I waited tables and I checked hats and coats at the Copacabana, you know, and I did the footwork because I was so in love with my dream. And you have to be because that particular one is going to hit you. You have to be really in love to take as many hits as, I mean, you have to be almost like a masochist to make it in that profession because you're going to get hit. And just tell you right now, and other way, you're going to get hit. So you better be passionate, better be believing so much in the love of your dream that, you know, it just kind of like washes over you. And I did that. And I had that. But I don't know if that kind of urgency can last. Maybe it can. It didn't last for me, though. I started veering off into other areas because, as life would have it, life was having me explore the depths of depression and depravity and deprivation and financial ruin. You know, it was having me explore these areas of violent, total, grandiose loss on every level you can imagine.
I love that you laugh about this.
Well, it is.
Like, but it just makes it so much better.
Yeah, but you know, the funny thing is,
of a story.
Yeah, because here's the point. It got so bad, girls, that I really only had two choices. It got so bad, I was in a corner going, you know, you got two choices, Pats, laugh or die. Those are your choices.
Oh my God.
Laugh or die.
I'm gonna get a T-shirt that says that.
Yeah, because
in quote, laugh or die.
And I know there are people out there who know exactly what I mean, because there's times when in your life where you've had such a sucky day, nothing went right, everything you wanted just slipped right through your fingers, and then you felt like people were attacking you all day. You're criticized, you're judged, you lost your job, you lost your husband, and you sit in the middle of the living room with a pint of ice cream, and you're crying, and you're crying so hard, it's so ridiculously sad that you start to laugh. It's like, what the hell? What the hell? Even the ice cream doesn't taste good anymore. I can't even taste my friggin' ice cream, and I'm not comforted by Breyers. Baskin Robbins is not doing the job anymore. Even okay. Baskin Robbins betrayed me.
Well, in reality,
you said you
just
wanted a pint. I want the whole half gallon.
Well, that's just it. But you know what's really depressing is when your best efforts prove fruitless, because, you know, even the comfort food, you can't even taste that. It's just your life has gotten so dismal and you just can't do anything right. You're so hopeless that you just have to, there's nothing else you can do. You sit there and laugh. And that's how people think you're a lunatic. I'm sure people think I'm a lunatic. Because why is she laughing?
When you're faced with a situation, though, and you know that that when you wake up in the morning, the sun's going to be out and it's going to be another day again, wouldn't you rather laugh than sit
there? Yeah, I mean, it's the only thing you have control of anymore. It's the one gift no one can take away from you. And I think that's not to minimize any of these tragedies. I mean, man, I tell you, there's been some tragedies in my life, as I'm sure there have been in many other people. But sometimes they come in clusters. Sometimes it just seems like, well, maybe it's better to get them all over with at once, and then I have free period for the next few months. You know, just come on, everybody. If there's something bad that's going to happen, let's let it all happen this week, and then we're done with it. But
exactly.
That wasn't my...
That was, you can live on.
Yeah, but then I got some no-hitters, and they kept swinging them over and over again. I said, excuse me, I met my quota. Excuse me. That's it. I don't want to hit anymore. Hey, you're having, it's not fair. That's for my neighbor. You're hitting me. This is my neighbor's problem. This doesn't belong to me. You can't take it away anymore. This is my neighbor. I don't even have anything left. Oh, my God. Yes, I do. There's my dog.
I literally love having you on the show because it's so fun. I'm laughing so hard. I'm like hanging off the bed.
Do you know Woody Allen? What he described, he had the best definition of comedy. The best definition. He said, "It's tragedy plus time." Because I can't.
Yes.
Because you know when you think about it, at the time it wasn't funny. No, at the time yeah. I didn't know what I was going to do. Hey, I lost. You know, I had to leave a show to take care of a child that was born with some very severe birth defects, and it was going to require 14 surgeries for him to get through. I had to wake up each morning and hold a mirror to my son's face to see if the mirror would cloud up, and I would pray for the mirror to cloud up because I didn't know whether he was still breathing. And that's the way I spent my first year of my son's infant stage, and that's why you can't be working in daytime. You can't leave. There's nobody to take your place. I mean, if you get a call from the emergency room, as I did, and say your kid stopped breathing, he's turning blue, he's in the ICU right now, and you can't leave. I couldn't leave. Who's going to replace? I can't say Sally, come on, and take over for me while I'm gone. I don't have that kind of job. So I had to make a choice. I had a job that didn't allow for emergencies, and that's fine. But I had a life that was nothing but emergencies. So I had to make a decision. And it was to take care of my son. But in doing that, this is why I say when everything kind of falls down, I made a decision that I felt was the right decision. I'm sure any mother would too. I mean, you don't leave your kid in the lurch just because you want to go work some job. You don't want to lose a daytime. You don't want to lose your fans. I mean, that's just, it's so ridiculously shallow and superficial that, it makes me want to vomit. So, of course, people talk about, they say, do you ever regret your decision to leave Days? Are you kidding? What decision? What decision? What God's green earth can you even say there was any dilemma? What question could you possibly have over a daytime show and your flesh and blood? This is an innocent baby who can't do for himself. You're his mother. So there was no question. Of course I'm with my child. But it did cost, but I was very happy I was with my child. I was doing the best to take care of him and his brother. But it cost me a husband, a house, two cars, health insurance, and a job and a career. I mean, I lost everything. Well, I say I can't say that sounds like a victim. I really don't like victim talk. I did that for a long time, and so that gives me the creeps too. So what I want to say is, I didn't lose everything. I gave everything away and traded it in for the health of my baby.
That's so worth it. I mean, I understand exactly where you've been. Well, not exactly, but my son was born very premature, so he was in the hospital for 8 months of his life. And
you
do what you have to do. You as a parent, you do what you have to do, and it doesn't matter what falls to the wayside, because at the end of that journey, it's so much worth it that everything else doesn't matter.
Well, you're right, Kathy, and I think it's to kind of keep your eye on the prize. And I'm so sorry that was 8 months of sheer agony, because I know what that's like to have to scrub up and wear a white uniform and put your hair in the hairnet and put gloves on and sanitize just to be with your child. I know what that, I live that too. And, God bless any mother out there who's listening, who has gone through that or is going through that now. I know what that's like. I live that once a year for the next 14 years, until finally a steel rod had to be nailed to my son's entire spine. But here's the thing. I chose to go through that journey with him, because that made me into, I didn't know I could love as deeply as I can. I didn't know that was possible for me. I'd always been a little skittish about intimacy, and man, I tell you, I've found out that that's not true. I found out that a lot of my self-image was so, you know, I used to criticize myself a lot, that the criticism was all wrong. And my son, the experience with my son, proved a lot of these old negative ideas of mine, proved them all wrong. That I was capable, I was more loving, and I was generous and sacrificing and all the things that I thought I wasn't. My son proved me wrong. So was it a good thing or a bad thing? Who knows? Was it right or wrong? Who knows? I had to stop looking at things as far as is right or wrong. I don't know. Is it good or bad? I don't know. All I know is this. I made a decision. I chose that. I take responsibility for that decision. I'm not a victim. My son's not a victim. We made choices to be together. And what we have today, I wouldn't trade for anything in God's green earth. Nothing.
Well, I mean, it just goes back to every experience you have becoming the fabric of who you are today. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that, you know, the challenges that you face, they might suck. And I'm also not a big believer in the, you know, oh, this is trials and tribulations, and this is just the test of what you're going through. You know, I'd rather not have trial and tribulation. Thank you very much.
Right, because that makes it even worse. Because, you know, if the situation is bad enough as it already is. But you know, when I found, like, oh, you know what I had to find out, Kathy and Emily? How I was telling my story to myself. I was making it worse a lot of the time, and I got to learn this too. My son taught me this. I make situations sometimes worse than they already are by the story I tell myself. I put trial and tribulation on it, and I clothe it in a black cloak. And I walk around with this black cloak on. How are you, Patsy? Oh, my God, you don't know the troubles I've seen. What's going on with your son? Oh, my God, it's been so scary. Oh, my God, my heart is in my throat most of the time. Oh, my God, I can't sleep. Oh, my God, I'm losing my hair. You know, and I start this story, and I didn't even realize I was doing it because I was so used to it growing up. You know, it's kind of like we have these accepted behaviors in society of, you know, people start complaining and all this and all that, and we go, oh, you poor dear. And we kind of, you know, that's been kind of like accepted as normal. But what I didn't realize is what it was doing to my heart. I was actually buying into the idea that life was terrible, that life was unfair, that this was being done to me, that things were being taken away, that it was a cruel, unruly universe. I was believing all these things, taking my son's birth and the loss of the career, the loss of the husband, the loss of the house, the loss of the cars, the loss of the money. I was taking it all personally, like, you know, I'm being attacked by this punishing God. And I was telling a story to support that kind of belief. And I'll tell you, that's a real scary place to put yourself, because you really can't be of service to yourself or anybody else when you walk around paranoid about when's the other shoe going to drop, because I'm a target. I'm a victim. I'm a poor victim. Poor me, poor me. And I was doing that. So what I got to do was tell my story differently. And that took, I'm telling you, that took a gargantuous effort. It was like turning around a steamship. I mean, it was like a ship going full head away and trying to turn that sucker around to avoid the iceberg. Because what I had to do was take a look at every single thing that happened with him. Like, I could go to the doctor and all the surgery didn't work, but I have to do it again. I had to resist going into, oh, what he's going to go through. You can't do this. Why are you putting us through this again? I had to resist going there. That's a natural place for a lot of people to go. I understand that. But girls, I just don't want to do it anymore. I don't want to live there anymore. It's so unhappy.
Well, and I think that was where I did have one advantage in that, because it was so sudden and quick, and I was pretty much in shock for, you know, a good bit of it. It stripped it down to the most base of, this is your reality. This is, you know, this is what it is, and you just got to figure out how you're going to barrel through it. And I think if it had been, you know, over an extended period of time like that, I mean, 14 years, that's a long time to deal with the major trauma in your life.
And you know, Kathy, you just brought out a really good point, and I almost forgot about this. Thank you for reminding me, is that shock is a wonderful way the body does protect itself in a lot of ways, because you're right. I do remember at first, I felt numb. I couldn't, I felt, I think we feel like we're falling apart so much that our body goes, okay, we're going to shut off all sensation. You can't handle it. Too many sensories are going on at the same time right now. We got to shut everything down. Main circuit shut down. Just function. And I had a doctor that told me to just get through the first year, to not to stop expecting myself to do more than I was possibly capable of doing. And I had to lower my expectations. And that's something I've never been able to do. But I had to learn, like you said, to live with just bare basics of just get through the day. And it was robotic and it was automatic and I was on automatic pilot. But like you said, but then when the automatic pilot wore off, it's kind of like being on Novocaine, like being on emotional Novocaine. The Novocaine eventually wears off and the reality sinks in and it was like, oh crap. Now what do? I've got my feelings back. What do you do with your feelings? I never knew how to do that. I got to learn how to handle gargantua, overwhelming feelings without going into the tragedy of the victim. And that's been worth it right there. That's been worth it for me because that seems to be my life story, how not to be a victim. Even though you have been victimized. But even if you have been victimized, you know, because as a kid, of course you're a victim. But how not to keep picking up where your perpetrators left off and keep victimizing yourself?
Well, that's something great to be admired too, I believe, though, is the, you know, learning how not to be a victim, because really, honestly, isn't just if you're constantly trying to make yourself or being, like you said, even if you were victimized, if you're constantly making yourself the victim over and over, you're never really moving on or healing from what's happened to you.
Well, and you're re-traumatizing yourself.
Exactly.
And now you're the one doing it. There's nobody, no, they aren't around. Nobody's holding a gun to your head. If you keep telling that story over and over and over and over, it's like you pick up a hammer that somebody else hit you in the head with, and they're gone, and you pick up the hammer, and you hit yourself in the head. Now, I did that. And I'm not pointing fingers at anybody. I'm identifying. If you have done that, I did that because I didn't know any better. That's all I saw people do. I didn't know that I had any options. I didn't know that. I didn't know there was a way to stop the cycle. Oh, my gosh. How many generations has this been going on in families that do it? Over and over, generational. And we kind of teach each other that it's okay. You know, we can make ourselves miserable and people pay attention to us. And this is the way to get attention, is to keep making yourself miserable. And it's a sick, it's the total dysfunction. And I was around it. I learned it. And then all of a sudden, it hit me like a meteorite that, what am I doing? Do I want to continue this with my kids? Do I want to continue the message that you can whine and complain and bitch and moan and that's the way to get attention, that's the way to get love? Or that loving someone is taking care of their feelings? No, I don't want to teach them that. So first I have to unteach me. Oh, God, I'm old. I can't learn. Well, guess what? This is your job. This is your new job. Patsy, please, you're going from Days of Our Lives, from being a glamorous soap star, to learning how to not be confined to being a victim. So you can tell other children how to play nicely on the playground together. No hitting.
Guys, I hate this so much, but we only have 5 minutes left. But, okay, just one thing. You're not old. I can't believe you just said that. You're not old.
Thank you so much. Oh, can I just go on with the diet? I'm so sorry.
Well, okay,
I didn't
y'all.
Okay.
No, my great-grandfather's 103. Like, you ain't old, okay?
Woo! Wow! That longevity in your family. Goodness gracious, go girl.
I think it's because he's Indian, because he's a Cherokee. I think it's the Indian thing. Maybe that's got something to do with it.
I've heard that. No, I've you know, Marie Cheatham, who was on Search for Tomorrow and on Day. She plays,
yeah.
She is part Cherokee.
Oh, I didn't know.
She's my Facebook friend.
Well, you notice how great she looks?
Yeah, I didn't know that
and
either.
I told her
That's
one day,
true.
I said, Marie, I said, you know, there must be a portrait in somebody's attic that's aging because you never age. It's like, you hear the picture of Dorian Gray. Somewhere there's a picture in somebody's attic that's really deteriorating because it doesn't hit you.
It's
and she
Indian,
said,
for sure.
It was the Indian, yes, and that's exactly what she said, the exact
well,
same thing.
Yeah. I got so many family members that never look older, and I only see them like once or twice a year, so like I would notice if they looked old. And they never look older, and they're, like, in the summer, I'm there, and the Indians, they tan really well, so they're so dark, and we went to my uncle's house, and he lives on private drive with gates and everything, and he's standing by the gate, and my sister had never met him, because he had just moved back to town, and I'm driving up to the gate, and she's like, oh, how cute, he has a little Mexican gatekeeper. I said,
because I'm such a motor mouth with diatribe about codependency today. But, I suppose that it was just something that needed to be talked about. And I hope, even if you're mad at me that you didn't
Absolutely.
Get to call in because I'm blabbering, I'm a blubber mouth, I promise you, I'll come back and I'll keep my mouth shut. But maybe there was somebody out there. But I'm thinking everything happens for a reason, right, girls? So maybe there was somebody out there that
absolutely.
Needed to hear what we're talking about, because it's a topic we need to talk about, and we need to break the cycle of this kind of behavior that in our society we've considered it's really nice and polite and oh, how are you? I don't know. I'm terrible. You know, it's like, oh, here, you poor thing, and then I show you love. And that's the way I learn that if I do this, if I act pitiful,
it's
you
annoying.
Love me.
Annoying.
It's very annoying, but we learn,
honestly.
We all know somebody who does that, or like me, I've been on both sides of the track. You know, I've been on both sides of the track.
Okay.
It is very annoying, and it's also manipulative. Have you ever had anybody manipulate you with their pain?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
No,
I mean,
I don't know. I'm young.
You're young. You're young. But you know. But here we're giving you the heads up.
Okay. I'm gonna I'm gonna DM you, and we're gonna figure something out, and we're gonna have some kind of annual group session. That's a good idea.
Okay.
But
we only have two
more minutes, so we have to shut up, unfortunately.
Okay.
Well, I can say one thing, though. I think Cody would be pleased because the last time you guys ended up crying at the end of the show, and we've pretty much laughed the whole time. So.
We've covered up.
Yeah, we always do that. It's no big deal. He literally does the same thing. I don't, whatever.
I got to tell you, guys are so.
This is so much fun.
You guys are so insightful. I can't tell. I mean, man, you're sharp. You're so sharp. And you keep me on my toes because you point out things that I miss, and I don't want to miss a thing.
I
could sing right now like that Aerosmith song, but I'm going to not do that. I was about to make out. So I really have nothing left. We really have to stop. Okay. Kathy, thank you so much. This was so fun. My day doesn't suck anymore. We had a great time, but they're going to cut us off if we don't shut up. So we love you so much, and I hope Cody's proud of this.
I love you guys, too. I love you, Kathy. I love you, Emily, and everybody who listened. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks.
Bye, girls.
Bye.
With us today.
Bye.
Bye.
Kathy, we've got like 20 seconds. I got to do announcements, y'all. Okay, Friday night with Kathy, and the show just ended. No, just kidding. Yeah, the show just ended. Oops.